Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, the weekend edition, 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm as well. Coming up on today's program, we'll take a look at some of the programs coming up this weekend here on Trumpet Radio. Lots of interesting things to discuss in relation to that. Also, we're going to continue to look at this tremendous book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. What's education and religion going to be like in the world in the future? We've got the answers for you. That and more, this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're at 101.3 KPCG, and we're online too, kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And if you'd like to email us, go ahead and send those in, comments at kpcg.fm. And we'll take a look at those for you. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. And Grant, admittedly, a little bit tired today, a little sleepy, maybe. Got in late last night. You guys, you had a nice trip out to Portland yesterday, and so you're back. And but not a lot of sleep.
Not really. We got home at 2 a.m, so I actually don't feel that bad yet. It'll set in later, but right now, I feel like there's some urgency. We have a radio program to
That's
do.
That's right. Yeah. Sometimes when you don't get a lot of sleep, you feel okay, and you think, "Hey, this is great." But then eventually, it slams you real quickly. Mm-hmm. If I think we've probably all had that experience from time to time. So anyway, hopefully everyone's having a great day today. We have some nice weather here in the local Edmond, Oklahoma City area. Been hot, but starting to cool down. Is it autumn yet? It's getting close.
I think it is.
Today,
I think it was the official end of summer recently.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, my almost 6-year-old daughter was telling me that it was the beginning of fall, and you know they keep track of that in kindergarten. I couldn't tell you what if it's fall, summer. I have a rough idea, but I can't give you exact dates.
They do always seem to have those days nailed down at school, and then when we get older, no one has any clue about that. It doesn't really matter as much because we don't get breaks on certain times of the year like the kids do.
That's right. Yeah, when you don't have school breaking up your year,
yeah,
you just everything kind of blends together. And with climate change now, you can't tell what season it is. It's snowing.
Exactly.
It's hot. We don't know what's going on. Let's talk about today's program. Interesting story to start with today. There's this write-up here on CNN. You may have noticed that teens are growing up differently today. The title of the article is Why Today's Teens Are Taking Longer to Grow Up. There's some studies showing that they have this sort of, adolescence that just sort of expands and goes on and on and on. And so they looked at all these different studies, and they've come to the conclusion that they don't know what's going on.
Oh, well, that's not too satisfying of a conclusion there. I would venture to guess that a big reason is that teens are being allowed to live as children longer by their parents. Otherwise, they would not have that opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. They said, well, we don't think because the teens are now, on one hand, maybe they're not getting into the exact same risky behavior that maybe some others would have in the past. But they said, well, it's not like they're more virtuous. They're just boring.
Right.
But I think the obvious conclusion is people aren't going out and doing as much with others because they're just on the internet or they're in their gadgets. I think that's pretty, it seems like that would be the clear conclusion.
Yeah, I read a pretty good article about that with one girl's personal experience. You might have seen it too, but it did show that whenever she was around her friends, they were constantly just staring at their phones, and they actually preferred to talk to each other on the phone, like just through these different chat apps or messenger apps, instead of even calling each other on the phone. They would just text each other back and forth, and they would maybe send each other these pictures. Even when they went to the mall, they had their head down and looking at the screens the whole time. When you're at the mall, you would think there'd be some pretty fun things to do, but it's almost like the screen is way better for these kids than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's what's slowing it down. And just also, well, fewer are working too, than they say. They're saying, well, they're not lazy necessarily, but maybe they just don't need to work. And if you don't need to, then you can become quite lazy, actually. There's a certain fear factor that's important. Like, if I don't work and I don't get paid, I don't get the things I need or want. So anyway, people are they're staying younger longer. And I do think, though, that it probably has a lot to do with the gadgets and so forth. And just a lifestyle where, I don't know, people are just maybe a little more dulled. Like, you know, it used to be that if you were home and you were not a lot of people around, not a lot going on, you felt this motivation to go do something. But now with the world at people's fingertips, I guess they don't feel the same need to get out and do something.
It is almost like we're all turning into spectators with the different gadgets that we have now, where we could just flip on a screen and watch people do the things that we used to think were fun to do ourselves. And then, you know, you don't have to exert any effort to put your shoes on and go outside. You can just watch it on a screen. So that is easier, but then people forget it's actually a whole lot less exciting as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I would equate it to eating like a sugary candy bar. Like there's an initial sort of excitement about it and you like it, but in the long run, you're not going to be satisfied. You're not right. going to be getting what you need. And I think it's the same way where if you're on all of your gadgets, yeah, there's a certain rush to it and a certain maybe thrill to it, but you don't get satisfied. You don't get the friendships and the life experiences and those things that really do make life exciting and worth, you know, living and looking forward to. You know, who goes to bed at night thinking, I just can't wait to get up tomorrow and check the internet again? You know, maybe people do. I don't think so. I mean, it's a habit, but I don't think it's the same as saying, oh boy, I can't wait to go have this experience with, you know, a group of friends or associates.
That really isn't satisfying. And in fact, a lot of studies have shown that gadgets actually take us in the opposite direction of satisfaction, to where we get more anxious because we're staring at screens all the time. We're often using those gadgets as a form of procrastination. So we know that we have responsibilities to take care of, but we're not doing them. That actually makes us totally the opposite of satisfied.
Yeah. So it's affecting the young people, especially because I think they're the ones that are more apt to get into the apps. Thank you. Thank you. Headline here at thetrumpet.com, top story today: Iran nuclear deal supporters privately admit its flaws. Who would have thought that this isn't going to work out? Weapons proliferation diplomats worry that joint comprehensive plan of action will lead to Iran acquiring nuclear bombs. They wouldn't do that, would they? Didn't they agree? Didn't we agree to not do that? Related to that, this is just a write-up that kind of talks about this here. This is from thestar.com. In defiance to U.S., Iran unveils latest missile during parade. They always have their military parades, and they unveil their missiles and so forth. Iran's Revolutionary Guard on Friday unveiled its latest ballistic missile capable of reaching much of the Middle East, including Israel, while the country's president vowed that Tehran would press ahead with its missile program in defiance of U.S. demands to the contrary. The unveiling came during a military parade in Tehran that commemorated the 1980s Iraq-Iran war. So, and according to the deal, which I guess they didn't sign anyway, they are not strictly prohibited from developing missiles. But after the deal came into effect last year, the UN Security Council adopted a resolution calling on Iran not to take any action related to ballistic missiles designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons for 8 years. And Iran said, nah, we're going to do it anyway. So that's what's going on.
The deal doesn't really make a lot of sense. The fact that they're allowed to develop missiles anyway, and that really it only delays the amount of time that it'll take for them to acquire nuclear weapons. Supposedly it delays it, although if they disregard the entire agreement in the first place, nothing is being delayed at all. What good came of this deal besides maybe some points for President Obama's legacy?
Yeah, and there's a lot of things in this country or in the world that are like this, where no one's solving it. They're just trying to push it down the road a ways.
Yeah.
Like, well, don't do this for 8 years. Well, does anyone think it's okay to be nuked in 8 years? You know, is that okay? Or you could look at the economy. Well, it's eventually, you know, we're never going to pay it back, but we'll just push it down the road a little bit. Talk about, you know, procrastination. We're masters of it.
And there's some pretty huge logical holes here. For example, if Iran is still allowed to develop any regular old missiles, well, I thought they were only developing nuclear technology for energy. They only cared about energy and not developing missiles or weapons to attack other nations with, yet they're still allowed to develop missiles. So it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense there.
And then, of course, you know, North Korea is belligerent as well, and there's a lot of thought that they're probably working together with Iran somewhat, and Russia's involved there. And then now we have this shouting match between President Trump and Kim Jong-un, each calling the other a madman and the rocket man, and it's just going back and forth. It's not funny, but in a way it is. It's like, you know, two guys in the playground or something hollering at each other. Only, you know, the fate of the world hangs in the balance.
Right. It kind of reminds me of a father disciplining a rebellious teenager, and the teenager has no real power in the situation, but he talks a big game and is always like threatening his parents, like, I'm going to run away if you do this to me. That's kind of the relationship it seems like right now.
Yeah, and I think I haven't read any big profiles on Kim Jong-un, really, but he's obviously a madman, and he thinks he's a god, and he needs this sort of vanity. And so having another world leader, and the most powerful world leader, I guess you could say at this time, refer to him as Rocket Man, has got to just infuriate him, because he wants to be idolized and he's getting belittled in front of the world. It must drive him crazy.
It must. And obviously, we've seen more ballistic missile tests and missile tests from North Korea since President Trump has confronted them more. You can see that they are not thinking like regular human beings over there in North Korea. Otherwise, they might take something from those threats and realize they should back down a little bit. They're not doing that at all.
No, he feels very bold. So we'll see what happens there. But anyway, it's all related to, well, you can go back to the Clinton administration and all the deals they made there. That didn't work. And now President Obama's administration made deals that didn't work with Iran. And so the top story today deals with Iran, specifically at thetrumpet.com. Iran nuclear deal supporters privately admit its flaws, and I should say, and publicly display them for the world as well. Related to that, America's deadly nuclear deal with Iran, that's from Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury. Check that out as well when you get a chance. Really important write-ups there. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show is coming your way with your host, Stephen Fleury. A few topics today. More details keep emerging about how much the Obama administration spied on its rivals, including President Trump and the American people. I think they were looking at info on American citizens about 30,000 times within, I forget the time period, but they were interested. And they try to tell you that, oh, it was an accident. We accidentally got all your information. The more that comes out about it, it's very strategic what they were trying to do. And for all the talk about Russian collusion, how about the spying going on here in the country? A lot more information about that. It should be an infuriating situation for American people to know that the Obama administration was spying on us.
We did see a massive scaling back of American liberties the last 8 years, because if you happen to be a conservative group, you'd be harassed by the IRS, the tax service there. Anytime you were a reporter that the administration didn't like, they'd try to wiretap your phone and see what was going on there. Those types of things are kind of reminiscent of a police state, or it sounds like it's going in that direction when you have the government spying on its own people as if its own people are the enemy, when there are clearly a lot of enemies that we should be focusing on instead of just looking at everyday Americans.
Absolutely. You know, Maxine Waters, right? She's infamous, I guess, these days. she's in Congress, right? Is that what she is, Congresswoman?
Yes.
Yeah, and she's always upset and yelling about things. And she recently, there's a headline today, actually, she says that, you know, they should impeach President Trump. And for what exactly? She says it doesn't matter. They can impeach him for whatever they want to, which I don't think that's right. But she said, well, he lies. He lies to people. So we're going to impeach him. What about President Obama? Lie after lie after lie. Then they admit the lies. Then they lie about the lies. And more comes out about all the spying. I mean, I know it's too late now, but it just shows the hypocrisy. You know, oh, well, so-and-so lied, get rid of him. Well, there's a lot of lies going on, and they're being ignored by the media if they're from the radical left.
It does say a lot about the left as well, the fact that Maxine Waters has become something of a cult hero among them. She can barely put together a coherent sentence. She does not have much of a thought process going on in her mind. That's why she's just constantly spewing out these crazy statements. Why don't you bring like one shred of evidence to the table before you call for the impeachment of the president? Why don't you have a little bit of respect for the dignity of the office instead of always being on the attack? I mean, she just goes in front of these crowds and these crowds just mindlessly cheer her on. And so every single day she keeps on talking about impeaching the president.
Well, she did say that she would guarantee that he did something wrong. So there's your evidence.
That's just weird.
She guaranteed it. And she's clearly talking to, she's speaking to identity politics.
Yeah.
You know, she's trying to stir up a certain base there. So anyway, really interesting to see what's continuing to go on there and with the spying. And there are spies. And as Mr. Stephen Fleury points out, you know, President Trump, he can't have a private conversation with a world leader without the entire transcript being released.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who's doing it? The spies are still at work.
Right. And the fact that the media is so quick to release those things doesn't speak well of them either, because whenever it is a secret conversation that does possibly have national security implications, the media should know better than to release those things as well. The spies wouldn't matter so much if they didn't have a platform in the media to let those things out to the public.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there is a clear movement to try to undermine everything the current president's doing. And you have to ask, well, where's that coming from? Who's doing that?
And look at the way they always respond to President Trump when, for example, back in March, he claimed he was being wiretapped. Then they started having all these experts on the news channels, apparently these mental health experts, to declare that the president was clinically insane. Okay, well, now it looks like he might have been right, and you should probably start taking back all of those horrible accusations that you made against him. Clearly, there is some evidence that maybe he was right. He's also made the claim that millions and millions of illegals voted. Everyone called him insane for that. But if you think about that logically, if half the states don't have voter ID laws, why would the illegals not vote? Clearly, there are some reasons to doubt here, but everyone just rushes to judgment and they throw out insults instead of looking at the facts.
Yeah. So as more info comes out about all that's going on there, it gets more and more sorted. And of course, America Under Attack is a great book to look at there at thetrumpet.com as well. And great again, too. Those two booklets really talk about what we've seen over the last 8 years and continues to happen here in the United States. On the program, he talked about how some are saying the world's going to end. Did you know this? September 23rd. That's soon, by the way.
Wow.
Make your plans. Fox News has this write-up. Could the world come to an end? They say that brings us to September 23rd, Saturday, a date that has sparked a range of speculation among various Christian cohorts. Some say they believe that the rapture will unfold on Saturday. Others believe the alignment of the stars, sun, and moon point to a coming series of prophetic events. And there are also some stranger theories involving Planet X. That sounds like a comic book.
Wow.
I wonder if there was a comic book called Planet X. A purported planet that NASA says doesn't exist, but that some people believe could somehow destroy Earth. where do people come up with this stuff?
I don't know.
But the whole point of this is, if you look into your Bible, it does show how events will unfold leading to the return of Christ. It does talk about the events you can look for, yet Christians ignore those prophecies. It talks a lot about a power rising in Europe. Do you hear a lot about that outside of thetrumpet.com and KPCG? You don't hear much about that, but you hear about Planet X. It's just people are ignoring the Bible and ignoring some of those clear prophecies.
Yeah, those prophecies would show that Europe is still waiting for a strong man to lead them, and until that happens, we can't move forward with a lot of these events that will precede Christ's return. That's why we know for a fact that the world won't end tomorrow. The prophecies say that. We don't have to look for some obscure sign in the planets that don't exist to figure out when the world is going to end.
So, and of course, a big thing too that a lot of people don't pay attention to is the holy days that God talks about in the Bible. And that holy day plan shows you step by step what happens, and it does show you what you can expect to see with Christ returning and so forth. So I wonder what happens to people when they make these specific dates and then they're found to be completely wrong. Do they apologize? They refigure their numbers, or what do they do?
That's rough, isn't it, to stake your credibility on a date like that. Maybe they just go back and they say, well, maybe I miscalculated, and then they send out another date and give some reasons behind that. It would seem like they would have to do that, otherwise they'd lose their following.
Yeah, I guess one of these guys is looking at, he's like a numerologist, sort of, where he thinks there's a bunch of numbers you can put together and it's like a secret code or something. But watching too many movies, too many things going on there. But anyway, so people are kind of looking at that, and that's an interesting thing to look at. But the point there is, of course, that there are a lot of prophecies in the Bible that do talk about the end of this civilization, this world as we would know it, but it doesn't unfold with Planet X or any of these other odd things happening. So make sure you listen for that Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up. Also, the Trumpet Hour Weekend Review program that's coming up as well this weekend. And a new Key of David, Answered Prayer. As hurricanes and fires wreck and ravage America, the question must be asked, is God answering our prayers? You would have to say no, based upon all of the destruction we've seen, including the latest that was Maria, I guess. Puerto Rico is still in the dark, blown back to the Dark Ages, as Drudge had it headlined. So we just see more and more of these problems. And, of course, that earthquake in Mexico. And, well, who knows? The year's not over, so we'll see what happens.
Well, recently the Texas governor and even our president declared separate days of prayer following Hurricane Harvey. But then, of course, Hurricane Irma hit. Now we have Hurricane Maria just devastating Puerto Rico now. The hurricanes continue, so are these prayers really being answered? Are these national days of prayer having the same impact as they used to under, say, Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah, and that's the question that is, you know, really looked at in this Key of David is that all there is to it? Like, do you just, is that all God says? We'll just pray about it and it'll be fine? Or are there other things that you have to do? Do you have to live a certain way? Or are there certain things that are right or wrong? And do you have to follow those? Those are some interesting questions. You don't hear a lot about that.
And really, those are the most important questions. If we find out whether God exists, the next thing we have to do is find out what he expects of us. Because if we think about it, if a being created us, why shouldn't we be looking to him for instructions? Or at least, why shouldn't we care what he thinks? It seems like we should have at least that little bit of self-awareness and gratitude for him creating us.
It's a really important program, the Key of David program, Answered Prayer. You can find it here on KPCG, and of course, it's on thetrumpet.com as well. And you can also find it on television this weekend. It's going to be interesting over the weekend to see how the ratings do for the National Football League. On one hand, it's not important, but on the other hand, it is, as has been kind of described, as the crown jewel of American sports. When you look at American, you know, power and affluence, you know, you do look at the entertainment, you look at the sports, and the NFL has been like this indestructible money-making machine, and now people are not enjoying it as much. They have Thursday night games, and they had two teams that aren't very good playing, and they showed a picture of the stadium. It was almost empty.
Really?
For an NFL game. They said they sold out, but most people didn't show up, and they thought maybe 30,000 people. But keep in mind, those stadiums hold, like, I don't know, 60, 70. I mean, they're
80,
yeah,
close to 100.
Yeah,
and some.
So it was really sparse, and the ratings are down for the network, so people are starting to lose money. I don't know. Probably two issues. One would be, on some level, maybe the brain injuries. People pay more attention to that. And then the protesting.
Right.
Those are the two biggies, I think. And maybe that cash cow is going away. I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe they'll at least start lowering the prices a little bit, because it is costly to try to bring a family to the game. You're probably talking about, like, at least $500 if you bring a family. So,
wow.
Yeah, you might want to lower the prices to at least offset the distasteful protests that are going on.
Even American sports are, like, coming apart at the seams.
Yeah.
Like, even the entertainments, you know, now the NBA guys, of course, they don't want to play as many back-to-back games because they think they get injured. And then former player Charles Barkley was pretty outspoken. He came out and said they're a bunch of babies. You fly in your first-class planes or your private jets, and then you can't play back-to-backs, and you're getting $40 million a year. He's like, I flew commercial. We played three nights in a row. You're a bunch of babies. So even the things that, you know, people would escape the more serious news and go into their entertainments and those things, even that's becoming like full of arguments and bickering and just not the same as it used to be. So it's interesting to see how society is kind of unraveling at the seams in a lot of ways.
Well, too many of those athletes are entitled and they're self-righteous and they're detached from reality, yet they feel like they have to tell us their personal beliefs, which is not why anyone goes to a distraction like that. No one tunes into sports or listens to music or anything like that to get a political viewpoint. That's why maybe they should learn what the audience actually wants and start complying with that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who wins out there. It used to be that kind of money won out, you know, whatever made money did. But now, I don't know. There's some odd decisions that are made because everyone's so politically correct or trying to be politically correct, and it's causing so many people to get turned off from, you know, from watching what used to be an entertaining afternoon's game. We have a really great book we're talking about here on the program here in the last week or so, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. A better world is coming than what we see today, thankfully, because there are a lot of problems that you can see. And this particular chapter talks about education and religion in the world tomorrow after Christ returns. What will that be like? And Mr. Armstrong has some just amazing points here. He says, when Jesus Christ returns to earth in the full supreme power and glory of the Creator God, he is coming this time to save the world spiritually. So that'll be a shocker for a lot of people because a lot of Christians think he's trying to save the world today. And as is pointed out, if that's the case, he's not doing well because, you know, the recent surveys show in the UK, people don't attend services or have any kind of religious, well, they have an affiliation, but they don't really have a personal spiritual life. Same here in the U.S. And then, you know, there's a lot of people that are just turned off to religion altogether or they're going a completely different direction. So Christ isn't trying to save the world today. That'd be a shocker for many.
Well, so-called Christians are horribly splintered amongst themselves as well. You have those who are Christians in name only, meaning they might identify more with that than Islam or some other religion, but they don't hardly attend church services. And then, of course, there's thousands of different beliefs among all those different denominations. If we really thought about that logically, it would clearly make no sense that Christ could be in agreement with all those different types of beliefs that are all contradicting each other. So when it gets down to that too, and we're talking about the amount of people actually so-called saved in this time, it would be very few. It would only be a certain group of people that all have the same amount of beliefs that are correct. And on all these other ones who don't agree with those beliefs and have contradicting beliefs would not be included in that group. So we're talking about a few thousand people. That's a huge failure if we're talking about Christ saving people today.
Yeah. And there's, of course, but there is a way that Christ is going to go about educating the world, and it's talked about here in this chapter in The Wonderful World Tomorrow. You can get the book at thetrumpet.com, and it's a great one to get, and it's free. And Mr. Armstrong points out those converted now are heirs, and the Bible talks a lot about that, heirs with Christ, joint heirs with him. What he inherits, they inherit too in a way. He says, we shall inherit the kingdom at Christ's coming. A lot of people, of course, think there's some sort of rapture there. They expect to see a rapture in a day or two. The misunderstanding of some scriptures there. But it says, the dead in Christ shall be resurrected, rising first, changed to spirit immortality. We, which are then alive in Christ, shall be instantaneously changed to spirit immortality and caught up with the resurrected ones to meet the descending Christ in the air. And, of course, you can find that in the New Testament. That's what he's quoting there. That's not just some thing he made up. He got it from the Bible. And it's interesting because, you know, people have a certain belief, I guess, and I don't know what they would believe in, heaven maybe in a lot of cases or something like that, or maybe some sort of a rapture. And it's you know, you can see that they've taken little points of certain scriptures and kind of just made some assumptions on them and not read through everything, which actually does spell out how things are going to work with Christ when he returns and the people that are going to help him and how that's going to work. And people are blinded to it, but they have all these other ideas that are based on a sentence here or a sentence there.
And that's why the Bible tells us specifically to piece certain passages and certain scriptures from different parts of the Bible together to get our understanding of different doctrines. If you just read one verse out of context, of course people are going to believe in the rapture. There was that movie several years ago made about the rapture, and it was just wild. I went and watched it without knowing what it was about, and then I figured out toward the end of the movie that it was talking about the rapture. But basically, you know, a pilot is in the midst of flying a plane, but all of a sudden he's raptured, and then the plane is about to crash. And then you have people walking around the mall, and where there was a person standing there 1 second, all of a sudden there's just a pile of clothes on the floor, right, and the person is gone.
Right.
And it just shows you, you know, there's someone driving a school bus full of children, and then all of a sudden the driver's gone. I mean, could you imagine the amount of destruction that would take place on the earth?
Oh, yeah.
If there was a rapture, it would be just extremely chaotic, and no one would even know why it happened. There would be no point to it if God wasn't revealing himself and showing why this was taking place.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I never really thought of that, but yeah, that would be horrifying. You gotta always ask the driver, like, what do you believe, just in case, you know.
Right. You're not a Christian, are you?
We don't want to have any problems here. But you know, and you can see why people would look at certain things in the Bible and kind of assume that, or they've heard that there'd be a rapture of some kind, but it's when you understand all the prophecies, it doesn't happen in that exact way. But Mr. Armstrong talks about how Christ is going to give all the nations a new and a pure language, and that's in Zephaniah 3 and verse 9, and going to be able to teach people. You know, you have to be able to communicate with them and teach them the truth. And so people won't have to be deceived any longer. It says in Isaiah 11, 9, the earth is going to be full of the knowledge of the eternal as the waters cover the sea, which is a great picture. There's a lot of, if you've been to the sea, you know, there's a lot of water out there. And so there's going to be God's knowledge there. But all this work of evangelism, of world evangelism, Mr. Armstrong says, of spiritually saving the world as a whole, not necessarily every individual, some may not choose to, but most will require simultaneously re-educating the world. And that's what it's going to take to get people to know God's truth and then all agree on it. Like you pointed out earlier, there's so much disagreement in religion today, even in the quote-unquote Christian religion. But then certainly if you factor in the other religions of the world, people are going to have to come to the truth of it, the truth of God's word, and everyone's going to have to hear that. And that's going to take re-educating the world. And that means being able to communicate with people and give them that understanding. So, how many wars have happened just based on religious differences? Mm. You know, in the name of, and that's why some people are turned off to religion, because they look at that and they say, well, most of the wars are over religious differences. And I don't think they stop to think, well, but are those religions correct, or is it deception?
Yeah, that is a pretty strong argument that a lot of them bring, is the fact that religion tends to preach peace while creating more wars than any other ideology. That is a true statement, but if all these religions are different and Christ and God are the same yesterday, today, and forever, and their beliefs never change, they only have one set of ideals, well, maybe we were looking at just two wrong religions fighting each other, and the true religion is off somewhere else, not involved in wars at all. That's what the actual fact of the matter is, but people just are so distracted by the wars taking place among these false religions.
Yeah, and it's there's been a history of it, and you know, it's going to happen again. You do see Christianity, so called, and Islam in particular battle. They're battling now, even though it's not a full scale war, at least not from maybe the Christianity side of it, but it is a battle. And I think people sort of know that, and that's why you have your leaders and so forth that have this multicultural dream trying to say, well, we can all get along, but you have beliefs that are so different, mm-hmm, that they separate people, and eventually it comes to conflict. No matter how much they try to appease every side of it, there's no solution there unless everybody agrees on a truth. If people don't agree on a truth, you're going to have conflict inevitably.
You do have to admire these leaders doing everything they can to reconcile people of different beliefs and backgrounds, but the only solution physically is a war. You cannot stop radical Islamic terrorism without going to war and obliterating it physically. But if you're in the true religion, you can just rely on God to take care of those things for you, and you don't have to go to war against them yourself. That's where the big difference is.
People are going to have to be re-educated for sure. Mr. Armstrong points out here in this book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, Close to half of all people on the earth today are illiterate. They are so ignorant they simply could not be given even what might be called bare saving knowledge. And so there might be this idea that, well, it'll just be sort of magic, you know, like, well, everybody will just know the truth. But you have to teach people. It's no different than teaching somebody, you know, any subject. What do you have to do first? You have to be able to communicate with them. And that's where this one pure language comes in.
Right. We often overlook the fact that half the world is living in horrible poverty-stricken conditions, and so many of them have never even seen words on a piece of paper before. They might not even have a language to speak to each other in. Maybe they grunt and gesture to try to figure out what they're talking about. We have languages in these more wealthy nations, and we can speak just fine, but even here, our language is deteriorating pretty quickly. We're having a pretty worldwide, large-scale educational issue. It's not just that the illiterate, even the people in some of the wealthier nations are forgetting how to communicate the right way.
Yeah, that's very true. I think people would say, on the whole, we're becoming more educated. They would think that anyway. But some of the basic things, communication, it's not that way at all. Just listen to, I don't know, you could pick almost anybody giving an interview of some kind, and some of the things you hear, you can't even discern what's being said in some cases. Or you'll read, like, say you read tweets or something that people would send out. And I hate to pick on the athletes, but it's usually the athletes.
Yeah.
Not that it has to be, it's just that's the choice, I guess. And you read it, and you're like, well, I know what they mean, but if you actually looked at what they typed, it wouldn't, mm-hmm. you know, the double negatives and all that, and just really odd sentence structures. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. So just being able to communicate just the truth of God to somebody, if you can't speak the same language and you can't understand, you know, what's being said, then you can't learn anything. And so there does have to be a re-education, even just here's how you read, here's how you write, not only for the people, like you said, that have never learned it, but then also for people that maybe have been in these wealthier nations but would rather be ignorant. And I think that's a choice. A lot of times people just rather be ignorant.
That's true. There is quite a paradox in education, because the very tiny few who are among the very smart among us today, they are smarter than anyone has ever been in history. They have an accumulation of knowledge like we've never seen before. But what that knowledge does to them is that makes them think that they are God unto themselves and that they don't have to look to a higher power. So many of those people in higher education today don't believe that God even exists anymore. They believe evolution as their absolute faith. But then on the other hand, you have people, our average educational system is just plummeting because our school standards are going down due to oftentimes political correctness. We don't want to give a child an F and hurt that child's self-esteem. So the standards in our average education are going way down, while those who work hard among us are skyrocketing in their education but becoming vain for it.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation in education in this country, for sure. There's a lot of people, like you said, going either way, where either they get into some really odd thinking or they just don't care, and they're just becoming more and more ignorant.
And think about a lot of those schools where they might be in the inner city, or they have kids there who are from broken homes or trying to survive gang violence in the streets, and then they come to school. School's the last thing on those kids' mind. They can't think about being educated or learning how to read English literature if they're worried about preserving their own lives back at home.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, it's even if you come from a pretty decent situation and you're going to a school and there's all kinds of kids and situations, yeah, I mean, some days you're absolutely right. The last thing you care about is what they're talking about, because you're trying to deal with the social ladder that you have to climb up and down every day, and just trying to get through that. So and that's part of life. But like you say, when it's more serious, you know, how do you expect somebody to sit there and do their homework when they're going home to a terrible situation? They're not going to do their homework. They're just trying to survive. Or, you know, you just give in to your base impulses, which is entertainment or some sort of stimulation, because there's nobody there giving you the structure you need to learn. I mean, we have a really great example here at The school, Imperial Academy. It's just it's a grade school in the high school, middle school here on the campus of Herbert Armstrong College. And one of the things that's really great about this school in particular is the music program. Most of the kids are playing some instruments. And so we had a service yesterday, and they had a full orchestra mm-hmm. of young people playing, you know, well, all the instruments you can think of, violins, and, you know, and some are playing the drums that had drums in it, and you know, all kinds of things, wind instruments. And, you know, any kid can do that if you're given the teaching and you're given the environment where it's encouraged, and you're given the instruments and you have a stable environment. I mean, look what you could do with the world. Look what you could do with kids. Instead of having kids out there, you know, getting into gangs and drugs and all the terrible things, what about putting an orchestra together? Mm-hmm. And you do see that. Some communities do that, and it's really remarkable, but you don't see it. There's not enough of that. And so, but it does show you. It is a little picture of what can be done when you start educating people, not just with God's truth in general, but just the physical knowledge as well of music and things like that.
Imperial Academy is really the prime example for how to establish right education, and to do that in the world, we have to rebuild our families. We have to make our cities safer. We have to do a lot of things to give these kids a safe environment, even at school itself, without worrying about, you know, getting mugs behind the school building itself. When kids do not have fear as a huge part of their everyday lives, and they're encouraged to grow and to excel, and it's not made to seem like it's lame and uncool, well, then they're really going to start prospering.
Yeah, I mean, people, all of us, we kind of have this sheep mentality. We go with the flow a lot of times. Yeah. And sometimes that's not a good thing, but if it is the right direction, then it is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And like you say, once it is the acceptable thing, it is the cool thing to try hard and like learn something, then people will go that way, and they'll go that direction. And I think we've mentioned this before, but you know, you look at certain communities or certain people, and you think, you know, what could they have done given the right opportunity, given the right education? How many people are there that have just never had an opportunity to even learn basic knowledge that could have been the great scientist or the great musician or the great, but they just never had the chance. So when Christ comes to reeducate the world, people are going to have those chances.
We won't be wondering anymore who was overlooked and left out and could have excelled in a different set of circumstances, because everyone will have the ideal circumstances under which to learn. That's a pretty big change from today, where only a tiny few are blessed enough to go to a private school or to go to a school that is safe and maybe has a better student-teacher ratio, to where maybe there's only 10 students per teacher instead of 30. I've been in a lot of classrooms where there's 30 students per teacher, and you don't learn very much in there, because the back half of the classroom can basically do whatever they want and the teacher won't be able to see it. That's not a good environment for learning, and we're going to have a lot better schools in the future to deal with problems like that too.
Yeah, I had one. The biggest class I had in college, I think, must have been a couple hundred kids.
Stadium
seating. And the teacher was down there at the front, the professor, and then I think had an assistant or two. And it was a biology class. And I remember the first day walking in there and sitting down, and the professor said, you know, look, there's so many of you, I'm not going to have a chance to really interact with most of you. You know, come for the lecture, don't come for the lecture, whatever. We don't take attendance. You know, show up and take the test. And, you know, that was that. Not real inspiring, not real motivational as a student, unless you had a real prod on yourself. Because, like you say, when you don't have any real contact or real personal interest from the teacher, it's hard to stay engaged.
It is. And that's just one of many problems in the public school system, but even the private school system. Every aspect of this world's education needs to change. Just considering that evolution is taught as if it's fact, that's the wrong foundation for the rest of our knowledge. If we know that God exists, that can be the right foundation, and then we'll actually have a chance to produce some good fruits.
Yeah, Mr. Armstrong brings up that exact point here in this chapter in The Wonderful World Tomorrow. He says modern education has been based on a false, erroneous, untrue foundation. The supposedly educated of this world, even the great minds, have absorbed false knowledge. They have been trained in a false approach to knowledge. Almost always, error is based on a false assumed premise or hypothesis taken for granted, never questioned, and of course, unproved. The educated minds have been filled with such false hypotheses. They have allowed a false sense of values to flood their minds, and of course, it is an evolutionary concept. And he says, truth appears to them to be fable. What is right may be to them foolishness. That which may be utterly wrong appears to be right. So it's completely the opposite. They come to view things through the false concept of evolution. This miseducation holds their minds captive. And as he points out here, one of the great problems facing the returned glorified Christ when he sets about to reeducate the world will be that of reeducating the supposedly educated. Because he says these minds, and they are indeed the world's finest and best minds in a lot of cases, have become so perverted with false education that they will be unable to accept truth until they first unlearn error. And that's a really hard thing to do. Take the example of throwing a football. If you've never done it before and somebody shows you how to do it the right way, you can catch on pretty quick. But if you spent 10 years chucking the thing around the wrong way, how much longer does it take to get it right? It takes a lot longer because you got all this false training that you have to try to get out of your head, or muscle memory, or whatever the case might be. So for people that are heavily steeped in false education, it's going to be tough. It's a lot easier, even when you look at God's truth. It's a lot easier for somebody that never really heard anything about religion or God or didn't know much about it to look at a book like The Wonderful World Tomorrow, look at the Bible and say, this makes sense to me. But if you've grown up and you've been taught all these other things that are not true, very hard or much harder to come to the truth of God.
Right. And going back to that football analogy, someone who's been throwing it the wrong way for 10 years is also going to say to the teacher, well, I've been playing for 10 years. Right. I know what I'm talking about. Right. The person who's never played before knows that he knows nothing about it and will listen. And that's also what's going to have to be dealt with in the future in education. A lot of people are going to be entrenched in their beliefs, and they're going to be sure that they have it right. They're going to say, well, I couldn't have lived all these decades on the wrong foundation and producing all the wrong fruits and having all the wrong ideals. But that is the case, and that's what people are going to have to accept.
Yeah, and that does answer a question that people have a lot of times. You know, they'll see a war, or they'll see a history of wars, or they'll see natural disasters, and they'll say, why would this happen? And it's because all these years later, when somebody is there and they're trying to be taught, you know, and God's trying to educate them, and they say, well, you know, I know how to do this. You don't know what you're talking about. You can point back to the 6,000 years of man's history and say, well, why don't you take a look at that? How did it work out? Like, a lot of times people, sadly, I mean, all of us, sometimes we have to learn the hard way, and we have to see something or experience something to finally admit, yeah, I didn't go about it the right way. So that's the point of all that history, just to show people, like, well, you tried it. You tried every government you could think of. You tried democracy. You tried communism. You tried everything. None of it worked. You know, you tried every sort of religious practice you could dream up. You tried every way to make yourselves immortal through all kinds of, you know, medical improvements and all these things. And at the end of the day, where did it get anybody? And there's going to be no denying that, because you can look at the history.
That's certainly going to be the focus of every history textbook in the future. It's going to highlight a man's helplessness on his own, his assuredness that he's doing the right thing, but in reality, he is not. And God's going to have to point to that constantly to show us that, well, we do need to listen to him, because otherwise what's going to happen is we're going to come right to the brink of nuclear annihilation once again. That's where it led us the first time.
Yeah, all of man's great inventions and knowledge, and it ends in an explosion. I mean, if Kim Jong-un had his way, it would. Mm-hmm. How far are we away from something like that?
How can we coexist with people like that who, and there are many of them on the planet, who think that way, and if they had the same power, they would probably do the same thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, thinking about a rogue regime like North Korea, it is helpful in a way because for people, say, in the West that would say, we know the way to live, we know the right way, you know, say your university students or something like that are really steeped in whatever they're learning. Well, you know, North Korea thinks they're right. You know, so who's right? Mm-hmm. What are you going to base it on? Everybody thinks they're right.
Yeah.
That's not the hard part of things, coming to the truth of a matter. That's the hard thing.
That's true. And who cares if we in America think we're right, if nuclear bombs start dropping on us? If we were truly right, then that would never happen to us. That's really what the end of the matter is there.
Yeah, Mr. Armstrong is here in The Wonderful World Tomorrow, talking about reeducating the world. After Christ returns, he says, God's inspired word, the Holy Bible, is the foundation of knowledge. But the world have been trained to hold this true foundation in prejudiced contempt. And that's true. They do hold it in that contempt. But that's the foundation of knowledge instead of the evolutionary foundation. It's going to be revelation. And that, you know, that's something that I think we should all understand, right? We were all kids at one point, and we go up to our parents and say, how do you do this? Or you'd ask questions because you don't know. And of course, Christ talks about that. You have to be like a child. That's a good attitude to have if you're a well-behaved child, I guess. But there are things we don't know, and we would go ask somebody that did know. And it'll be the same in using God's word. You can actually do it today. If you don't know, you can look in the Bible and find the answer.
Well, we need to remember that we are all babies at one time, totally dependent on our parents for literally every necessity of life. And then as we were children, we might be able to walk and talk, but we still depend on our parents for everything. But as time goes on and as we get older, even as early as the teenage years, we start to think we know everything and we can do it all on our own. Well, we've all had that humble beginning, and we need to remember that because even as adults, we don't know everything, and we still are dependent on a higher power every day. We don't know when the next hurricane or tornado could come through. We don't know when another wildfire or terrorist attack could wipe out the area where we live. And so we don't have control over those things. In that way, we're still just as helpless as we were when we were babies.
Yeah. So it is, if we can have an attitude of knowing we don't know and wanting to find out, then that we can get a long way in life. I think every teacher likes a student like that.
Oh yeah.
That comes and asks questions, and they're inquisitive, and they ask good questions. They're paying attention, and they want to learn something. There's a lot in this chapter, more than we can get through today. It's in The Wonderful World Tomorrow, and the title of the chapter is Education and Religion in the World Tomorrow. And it gets into a lot of specifics too, exactly how this government will work. It'll be, of course, headquartered in Jerusalem there, this New Jerusalem. And Christ is going to have resurrected people working with him. And it's amazing, all the details that are laid out. And again, it's not just some sort of, you know, hey, wouldn't it be neat if? it is based on scriptures that are all laid out here for you. So you can look at this booklet and see how some of these things are going to happen. But a really good point here, just to conclude, is Mr. Armstrong talks about how God does train his future leaders in very specific ways, and he shows that through how God worked with people in the Bible. And he says, God began ensuring the efficiency and perfection of his world-ruling government by causing Abraham, Isaac, Israel, and Joseph to be trained during a lifetime in several basic essentials for top personnel in a government of perfection. He said, first is the right attitude. So that's something everybody needs if you want to be educated. You need a right attitude, and you have to want to learn something. And then he said, secondly, they were trained in the knowledge of the true values. So the attitude first, the true values then come along with that. And it's no different today. If somebody is supporting God's work, or they want to, and they want to learn and grow in this lifetime, those are the things that have to be worked on, right attitude. And then, of course, you begin to learn and learn how to apply the true values.
And learning those true values does hinge on that right attitude, because if our attitudes are atrocious, like we see everywhere today, God can never teach a mind like that that is intentionally closed to his true values. And then, like Mr. Armstrong brings out there, once we have that attitude and those true values, God then starts giving us responsibilities and making us apply what we've learned. Instead of just having this head knowledge, we have to go out and put it into practice.
Yeah, and that's what a Christian life is applying the true values and actually living it in your life. And so that's all laid out here in really, really specific detail. It's a great chapter, and it's a great book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. It's free at thetrumpet.com. Make sure you check it out. It's very hopeful, very hope-filled. And, of course, when you look at headlines, there's not a lot of hope out there. And even the things we used to find hope in, I guess, on some level, the entertainments of the world, those things are starting to not be what they once were. But you can find real lasting hope here in this great book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. And it's at thetrumpet.com. Make sure you check it out. That's all the time we have for today here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us today, and make sure you listen for the Key of David program. It's a new one. And the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, Trumpet Hour Week in Review, all coming your way. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.